Welcome to the Grow Well Podcast. I'm your host, Dusty Heggie, and the Grow Well Podcast has recently went through a change. Formerly, Get Planty Podcast is now the Grow Well Podcast. But don't worry, so much of the content is going to stay the same, but I'm leaning in to what it means to grow well as a person, to grow well emotionally, spiritually, and maybe even a little bit of business growth. We're going to cover it all, and I'm so excited to bring you along in my own growth process and my process of trying to learn how to enjoy growing well. Each week, I'll bring you actionable houseplant care tips, incredible guests to unpack what it means to grow well, and leave you feeling so encouraged and inspired as you curate your own dreamy houseplant collection. So grab a cup of coffee, snuggle up next to your plants, and let's have an honest conversation about growing well. You guys, today I have Christina Lynn from Christina Lynn Creative here talking about some really raw, hard, vulnerable stuff. Like, this is a long episode, but the content is so deep. It's such high value. You're not going to want to skip any of it. So I just really want to urge you to make sure that you make space in your mind to listen to this episode, because the content that she covers is pure gold. It is just so inspiring and so raw. And I do kind of want to warn you that her story is a really hard one. Like, she shares a lot of hard stuff. And before we listen to the incredible content that she shares so eloquently, I think it's important to note that Christina is a really, really dear friend of mine, and that she is sharing the content that she's sharing from a place of walking through it, from a place of learning as she goes, and recognizing that there is such beauty and value found within growing well as we share our stories and the different tools and mediums through which we get to do that. So as you listen to her incredible words, remember that this is something that she has wrestled through for such a long time, and that the words that she has to say are spoken from true experience, and that she is one wise lady. I cannot wait for you to hear all the things that she has to say. But one more thing before I dive into this episode, I want you to also know that Christina is an Instagram coach. And what that basically means is she wants to help you have a very holistic view of the platform, whether you're an entrepreneur, whether you use this as just a tool to be a beautiful piece of art, or if it's just something for fun. Like, she truly believes in a very holistic approach to Instagram, and she wants to help you make this platform fun and inspiring, and to be able to be a tool for gratitude, and to be able to find freedom within building a beautiful aesthetic and creating a piece of art that gets to live on the internet. And so she has an incredible resource called Christina's Instagram aesthetic method. And it's really, really awesome. I have gotten to see her make this from beginning to end, and I've constantly referred back to it. You can grab this free tool at ChristinaLynnCreative.com, and there's a bar right up at the top where you can download it for free. And I really urge you to take advantage of that, because Instagram can be a place of a lot of stress and a lot of frustration, or it can be a place where you can find gratitude and freedom and build community and have fun, and all those beautiful things that we are sort of promised that Instagram can bring us can be true if we have a very realistic approach, and if we take the time to wrestle through these hard topics of storytelling and what it means to do that in a beautiful, safe, good sort of way. And so Christina's Instagram aesthetic method is just one tool that she has in her whole arsenal of incredible content to help us to do that from a visual perspective. So head to ChristinaLynnCreative.com to download that. And I have a direct link for that for you in the show notes. All right, without further ado, let's dive into my chat with Christina Lynn from Christina Lynn Creative.
Well, my dear friend Christina, do you want to tell us about yourself? Ready, go.
Oh, okay. where do I start? I feel like I always have to start with where I live, because that feels like the coolest thing about me.
It is pretty cool.
So I grew up, it is pretty cool. I like where I live. So I grew up in Southern California, in the Mojave Desert. So not the pretty places where people go for vacation, the place they drive through to get somewhere nice.
To get to the vacation.
Yeah, to get to the vacation. No one stops where I lived for vacation. In high school, we used to call it God's Cat's Litter Box, was where we lived.
Oh, nice. That's
nice. It was nice. Yeah, so I grew up there, and it was brown and dusty and gross, but not like, you're not gross and you're dusty, but not like that. Okay. A different kind of dusty.
A different, a non-attractive dusty.
An unattractive dusty, unlike yourself. And then when I was 18, I'd had plans to like go to film school in San Francisco, and I was like super academic and did really well in high school, and so like my future was kind of planned out, and I was supposed to like go to school and like marry my high school sweetheart and all that stuff. And then everything kind of blew up because we had some family traumas that just meant I couldn't leave my mom and my brother basically. And we had no money. So like all of my plans kind of just fell apart and I couldn't afford to move up to the city or anything. So, I lived with my mom and my brother for a little while, in Bakersfield. We had to move like 3 hours away from where I grew up. So I was like in a town where I knew nobody, and I was just like working a part-time job and helping my mom take care of my brother. And then I had a distant relative offer to host me in the UK for like 6 months. And I'd always wanted to visit the UK. So maybe like 6 months after I graduated high school. Yeah. So I was 18. I just moved out to the UK and I met, my boyfriend who I'm with now. My previous relationship ended. I should probably say that first. I was like ended one, and then I met my boyfriend, right, who I'm still with good. Now. Yeah.
That's, time waiting that's for that is really
important.
Yeah.
Mention. And yeah, so I fell in love with the UK, and I fell in love with like the cute British boy with the mustache. And so when I went back to the States, I was like, my only goal was to move back to the UK. So I just worked and saved. And then I came back a year later, as a student and like begun the long immigration journey, which I'm still on. But yeah, so that all kind of started when I was 18. And I moved out to the UK in 2013. I don't know. I can't keep track anymore. I was 19 when I moved out to the UK permanently, and I started, my bachelor's degree in English and creative writing, and I carried on all the way through until I finished my master's. So I have a master's in English and creative writing, and I run a business coaching people how to write, like copy that they're proud of that incorporates their stories and their like kind of personal branding. And I do wedding photography and branding photography, and I lecture part-time at a university teaching people how to write essays better, and that's me.
Yeah. I think the reason I really wanted to bring you on the show is beyond just my incredible love for you, and you're just so wise and you have a lot of good things to share. But it's because of your love of storytelling, and like that storytelling piece is so important in the process of what it means to grow well. So can you maybe unpack to us a little bit more about your business and maybe why storytelling is important?
Yeah, I think I've been really blessed by God in a couple of ways that I didn't even really recognize until I got older. So like I was always good with words, and I was always, I think because I was raised in a pretty stable home, I felt safe to be transparent. Yeah. So I grew up having a gift with words and feeling like brave enough to be transparent with people. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that bit me in the butt, and I shouldn't have been quite so vulnerable with people. And like you get older and wiser, but yeah. I did always have this like proclivity towards like sharing my story, sharing my feelings. And so like that was just kind of me, and that was who I was. And then like the reason I introduced myself by sort of telling like my journey of moving to the UK is because so much of that was like a story arc, like a novel level story arc where there was like, you know, this huge conflict that took place, that was like the climax of a story. And then the resolution was me sort of, you know, finding home somewhere else and finding healing somewhere else. And, so I'm really proud of my story because for me, it's just such a testament to God's grace. And I kind of like when I talk to clients, because I did my master's in creative writing, obviously, like I think I can think through someone's life story and sort of categorize it the way you would the different like sections of a novel mm-hmm. through like that story arc. And I kind of believe that every person's story fits into a story arc of like a, basically a testament to God's redemption in our lives. Mm-hmm. So like every person has got pain at some point in their life. And I kind of see that as like the climax of the story, where the prelude of the story was that we're like, we're born into brokenness. That brokenness right. results in pain. And then that pain, when we give it to God, results in like a resolution. And it's an ongoing resolution of us like living in grace. Mm-hmm. So my story was like a pretty clear cut testament to that, because, you know, I was born into brokenness, and then, you know, I had to suffer a lot of pain early on in my life. And then I got to witness like a huge, I got to witness a huge example of God's grace. Mm-hmm. My mom just called. Have I told you before?
Every
I think I have.
Time.
My mom calls every time I'm on a mastermind or I'm with a client or I'm on a podcast.
It's like she knows.
She knows. She just wants to be here. Bless her. So yeah, my story like kind of goes through that arc pretty well.
Right.
And so I felt really proud to share it, because for me, it's like our story is the most personal thing that we carry, but actually, it has so much less to do with us than it has to do with God.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think that it's so beautiful when people can be brave enough to share their stories, whether, you know, the pain that's like that conflict arc in their story, whether that pain is from like their own sinfulness and mistakes that they made, or in my case, mistakes that someone else made that caused a lot of pain in my life and I had to deal with that. Like whatever the catalyst is for the pain that sin causes, God will reveal his grace in that situation, like no matter what it is. So when I get to share my story, I get to show that to people. But then when I hear other people's stories, I am blessed by seeing like just how vast and creative God is in the different ways that he redeems people from the different places that they come from. Like, I feel like, you know, we're constantly going through this realization that every day is a new opportunity to learn more about God. And we get all of eternity to learn more about God, and we will never stop learning about him. And each time we hear somebody's story, we get to learn a little bit more about God and how he operates, because he's so personal to each of us. And he made us so uniquely that each of us have a story that's so unique. And so I just feel like when it comes to sharing our story in our businesses, like, I mean, I'm so for personal branding, and I think it's like the way forward, because with Instagram and Facebook and everything, people are getting, you know, overwhelmed by the feed. And so they only connect when they see a face and they can attach that face to a personality and a story. And so with personal branding, I feel like the only way that you're really going to connect with people, and particularly like if you are a Christian and you want to be connecting with people for the kingdom, is to use your story to bring glory to God. But also there's this interesting like paradox between we're so individual and yet God made us to have relations with one another and to connect with one another. So when we hear each other's stories, we see how unique God is and how he can bless all of us with his grace. And then B, we also get to see how much he made us to identify with one another, because we will identify in each other's stories and we'll identify in each other's pain, even if the pain comes from a different place. So it's like, while God is both making us feel so individually and personally loved in our stories, he's also building relationships amongst all of us to strengthen his church with our stories. And I just think that's an amazing thing.
Yeah, it is really amazing. And I think that's where that like, that friendship gets to come into play, because you can't really trust and invest in really loving a person well without knowing their story, without connecting with them on a really human level.
Exactly. Yeah. There's intimacy there. Like you're not going to be as close with someone who doesn't know you as well. And people don't get to know you until they know your stories. Like, I think it's so like amazing, like you and I have never met in person, and yet our friendships developed like pretty quickly, because over the course of like a year, we've just like shared our stories with each other on a regular basis. And like, I feel like you're one of my closest friends now, because you know me, you know my story.
Yeah. Yeah. How can other people do that? Like whether it be through their branding or just through their real life and building relationships mm-hmm. and sort of creating that community, how can they, I don't know, like practically share their story?
I mean, I think that it's definitely a learning process for people. And like I said, you know, when I was younger, I made mistakes with my transparency and I learned that there were times not to be quite as open and share as much of my story with certain people. One of my brand pillars is wisdom and vulnerability. Mm-hmm. So being wise about when it's appropriate to share and who you're sharing with. Obviously on public platforms, I kind of have systems that I take my clients through, like a series of questions that I'll have them ask themselves, like before they post something, like, who is this benefiting? Is it bringing glory to God? Who might it hurt? And just like, it doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing if it hurts someone, because you can't always please everybody, but it's right. Like, if it's hurting someone, why is it hurting them? And is the risk worth it to bring glory to God, and who is it going to benefit in like sort of that risk assessment? So that whenever you're sharing something, you're being really wise about it. When you're doing it personally, when you're offline, I think it's just important to be really thoughtful of, who you're talking to. I think that something that I've learned as I've gotten older is that I want to invest a lot in my friendships, which means I need to have fewer deep friendships so that I can invest more in each one.
Right.
When I was trying to give too much of myself and share too much of myself to too many people, not only did I feel drained, but also I realized that there were certain people who they didn't need to know my story because they didn't bluntly put, they didn't care.
Right. Yeah. Well, and, not everybody can or will.
No, and they don't need to. That, yeah, and that's the thing is like, if you're going to be vulnerable, I mean, it's easier for me because I have always kind of grown up being very transparent, but for some people that's really, really hard, and that's okay. It doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with you. It doesn't mean that you should keep everything to yourself. You need to have intimacy with somebody, but mm-hmm. if you're going to be brave and be vulnerable, whether it's easy for you or not, I think that you just need to feel safe in knowing that the person you're being vulnerable with cares, because you're giving a lot of yourself and it's a scary thing to do. So yeah, just sharing either in confidence, you know, over coffee or, you know, publicly on social media. Mm-hmm. I think it's just feeling that it's coming from a place of wisdom, that it's been intentional. I am not one to advocate just sort of like sharing out of like raw emotion, particularly out of anger or out of malice or out of deep hurt. Those things, I think you need to take enough time to reflect. And that's not to say you can't share things in the moment. So like on my social media right now, I just lost my grandfather to cancer last week, and I'm sharing that in the moment. But none of the emotions associated with that are emotions that could bring, I don't think they could bring any sort of disrespect towards anybody else. Right. And I'm using them to bring glory to God. And so I feel okay sharing those kinds of raw emotions. But if it's raw emotions of anger, anger towards someone else or towards yourself, I think it's really important to work through those things with God first and with the other person, if there's another person involved, mm-hmm. before you share it publicly. And if you're sharing it in confidence with other people, particularly if it is like a story that involves someone else, I think it's just good to make sure that it's with people who you trust to be respectful to all parties involved and who are going to love you through whatever the story is and whatever shame you might associate with it, that you're sharing it with people who are going to love you through it. So,
yeah. And it's cool to see how you're using those questions that you ask your clients to like work through that process of what stories they should tell and if they're benefiting or if they're hurting, and that you're using those questions for your own content that you're sharing within like social media platforms. I think that's really cool. I had never thought about sort of asking yourself a list of questions to see if this was going to be beneficial or not.
Yeah. And like, I'm very, it's interesting cause I'm super creative and emotional, but I'm also very like, pragmatic. And I think that's why I enjoyed my joint degree so much. So I did English literature, which was very practical. And then I did creative writing, which was very emotional and creative. Yeah. And so I love approaching creativity, but through like pragmatism and being able to make sure that while you're able to express yourself in a way that feels like you are sharing your heart authentically, mm-hmm. you're also doing it in a way that feels like, I guess that's where the wisdom and vulnerability comes from. It's like, if you've got some structure and you've got some basic questions you can ask yourself, you can sort of run it through a filter of like, is this wise? Without just sort of basing it on your emotions and, well, it could be wise. It could not be. Like, if you actually have questions that you can implore of yourself, mm-hmm. you can come to a more concrete answer, and then you're able to share in confidence. And like, that's what I say when I tell my clients, like, my job is to help you share with confidence. It's you feel that when you press that post button, that you have written something that has been like wisely mapped out, mm-hmm. that has been intentional and thoughtful, and you can be confident about it.
Yeah.
All throughout my bachelor's and my master's. So I was on a visa where I couldn't be self-employed. So the whole time I was doing my degree, I was desperate to start a photography business because photography has always just been like my passion project. Yeah. And I couldn't start one legally until last year when I switched onto a partnership visa. So I started my photography business, like I hit the ground running as soon as my visa was like got through the post. I was like, right, okay, I can start my photography business. Didn't mm-hmm. even think about doing writing because I have just loved photography since I was like 14, 15. I got my first camera when I was 15. So probably, yeah, like my sophomore year of high school, I fell in love with photography. And to be honest, it didn't start out as like this deeply philosophical love for storytelling. I'd love to say that it was, but it wasn't. You know, so many photographers will say things like, well, you know, I just loved freezing a moment in time to revisit, or I loved like capturing an instant and helping people re-celebrate. And like, I didn't think about any of that. I was just like, I was a super moody, cerebral, artsy, fartsy teenager. And I wanted to, I called it, bringing attention to the mundane. My
how poetic.
I don't know what that means. Yeah, I thought I was so poetic and deep. I don't even know what that means. But I would like take pictures of like candy wrappers on the floor that had been like crumpled up, and like doorknobs, and just like weird postmodern nonsense. I would just photograph because I wanted to like bring people's attention to the mundane. I don't know.
To litter.
But I liked just feeling like I could be in a space where I was able to recognize things mm-hmm. and then force other people to recognize them by like posting them on Facebook or whatever, whether or not they wanted to see those things. I was like forcing people to recognize things that matter to me, because like I said, I've always had a problem with like reining it in and talking too much. And so in high school, that resulted in a lot of people just like shutting me out. Like, Christina talks too much. I don't want to hear it anymore. So like, I didn't feel like I was heard, even though I had a lot to say. So I used photography as a way to make people like see what I cared about. And so I would take pictures of things that I felt like I was the only one who noticed. I probably wasn't, but it was slightly self-indulgent because I was 15 and I just wanted to like feed that artistic need. But it was also like, I felt like it was giving me the opportunity to force people to like recognize things that they would normally ignore. I didn't actually feel that passionate about candy wrappers on the floor. What I did feel passionate about was like forcing people to look at detail and pay attention to things that would normally go over their head. So that was kind of how it started. And then like over the years, I just like couldn't put my camera down. I started photography and painting at the same time. And I've always had this thing about color. Like, I just love like color and light. Like, I'm a very visual person, but photography was easier to like keep up with because I could take my camera with me anywhere. Mm-hmm. And it was less equipment. It also allowed me to sort of like, cause I'm sometimes like socially awkward. If I've got a camera in my hand, I don't have to socialize. Yeah, I can just wander around taking pictures. So I just carried on doing that. In social situations, I would just have my camera with me, and it slowly turned into, rather than just like me taking pictures of random stuff, I started to really notice the little details about people. Mm-hmm. I think that sort of coincides with as I got older and like relationships were less scary for me and I felt a little bit more like okay in my own skin, I was able to embrace recognizing the little details about people. And I liked color and I liked light and I liked seeing how I could still, like when I was 15, bring people's attention to things that I saw as beautiful. But there was over the years a lot more intention going into like crafting beauty out of things for people, not just to see what I'm seeing, but actually be able to admire what I'm seeing. And so I started doing family photography and then that moved into wedding photography. And it was through wedding photography that I fell in love with like the covenant of marriage, which was funny because I started doing wedding photography at the same time that my parents' marriage was ending. So it was like I was deeply devastated by this like end of a marriage that I had grown up with that I thought was solid. But at the same time, God was like showing me how to celebrate like all of the beauty in marriage. And so photography for me is telling stories because there's what's in front of the camera. Sure. Like you can click the button and you can capture what's there. And there is an element of just by doing that, you're telling a story and that's a good thing. But the craft of photography and like not just capturing what's there, but like if I'm photographing a wedding and I've got my couple and I find the perfect light and I move them into that moment, like I am helping them have an image afterwards where they get to remember that moment where the sun was shining on them perfectly and they got to just like have that quiet time between the two of them and with God. And I captured it in a way that magnifies and celebrates the beauty of that light. And so it's crafting a story as much as it's capturing a story. So
yeah,
because I'm so creative and passionate, but I'm also pragmatic. I feel like the writing aspect of what I do is the pragmatism and the photography is like just the passion of like, you don't need to listen to anything or read anything or think about anything. You can just look at what's there and you can see like a beautiful story.
Yeah. I think even just in you sharing, I guess, your story in your photography journey just goes to show the process of what it means to grow well and just trying thing and embracing the moment where you're at and like letting that journey come slowly. Cause you were like forced to wait for 4 years where you got to practice that craft without the pressure of having it as a business. Like it's just really cool to see that even though in the moment, I'm sure it just felt crappy and frustrating because you had big goals and big dreams that you wanted to achieve, but how cool it is that God...
And I was poor. I was a student and I was poor.
How cool it is that God gave you that story and blessed you with that story and has given you opportunities to practice telling that story because that is like what you've been able to give to other people through that process. Like your journey would look so different had you been able to start that photography business right away with candy wrapper photos.
For sure.
on the line of like moody, broody teenagers, my very first blog was called like Cliffs and Canyons. And
nice.
I had a series on there called The Starving Artist. So.
Oh, that's so good.
I know. Yeah.
Oh, man.
It was top notch.
Did you ever have a Tumblr?
No, I mean,
Tumblr's
never did.
Still a thing. I don't have one anymore, but I had one called Hope in the Darkness, and that was all of my broody poetry.
Oh, you're broody.
Oh, man. I was so broody. I've been going through and clearing out my Facebook, and like, so I'm reading back like posts from 10 years ago, and I'm just like, shut up, Christina. You're just way too moody. Nobody can handle this. I can't even handle this.
I just think there's a lot of beauty in that. I have been a journaler my whole life and being able to go back in my journals and thinking like, wow, this does not even matter. Why did I write about this? And then I have to stop myself because it did matter to me in that moment. Otherwise I wouldn't have spent all this time trying to wrestle through it and work through it and learn through this process. So it is really cool. Even though we feel like 10 years later, we were just throwing a fit and maybe in some degree we were, it really still matters in that moment and there's still value there.
Absolutely. And I love you, Jesse. You look at everything with so much grace. I feel like everything that you approach, you just give it so much grace. I am less kind to my 15-year-old self.
Your 15-year-old self.
But I think like, I am, it's interesting because I agree with you and that there was so much that I wrote about and posted about that really deeply mattered to me. And like, the fact that it mattered to me then meant that I got to work through it. And that meant that I am who I am now because I worked 15-year-old me worked through those things. But I guess this kind of like goes back to the whole storytelling aspect. Like there might be things that you look back on in your story that don't make you proud and don't make you like fond right. of yourself. And there's a lot of like memories that come with like reading all of my deep thoughts and thinking like, oh gosh, 15-year-old Christina had way too much like thinking time. And then it reminds me of like, you know, all of the thoughts that I tried to share that weren't received well, and all of the times that I felt like nobody could hear me, and all of the times that I like, I resented my own inability to like stop talking because yeah. I could never stop talking. And so like, I just appreciate so much that you can like look back on yourself and give yourself that grace, because that's something that like God is teaching me how to do, like to even give my own self from 10 years ago grace, like God right. has already done. Which I think once again is like why reflecting on our stories is like, I call it like the constant resolution. Mm-hmm. Living in grace is like this constant resolution that we are like learning how to do, because if God can give us grace, then we can give ourselves grace, but it's right. not easy to do.
No. Yeah. And it sounds really dreamy and beautiful and poetic, but there's a lot of like grit and hard work, I think, that comes
oh yeah
in with that process that we tend to not want to focus on as much.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to take a quick second to pause this incredible conversation with Christina and tell you about something I made just for you. It is called the Get Planty Houseplant Foundations course, and it is an online houseplant course that teaches you more than the basics, but the foundations of houseplant care. This course is about 5 hours from start to finish, including homework and some really applicable quizzes to just to help you remember the things that you're learning and to implement them well as you go. My intention and my hope for this is that you get an incredible way and a unique way to add fun to your life, to prioritize self-care, and to confidently curate and build a houseplant collection within your home. It doesn't have to be stressful. It doesn't have to be expensive. It should be fun, and it should be something that you learn as you go, and a way that you get to grow well. And the way you get to build your houseplant collection is super up to you. And so this course is self-paced. You get to work on it as you go. There are videos, there are quizzes, there are lots of bonuses and freebies. So if you head to dustyheggy.thinkific.com, or you can just find it at my website at dustyheggy.com/getplanty, there you can enroll in the course. And right now the course is only $30 at the time of this recording. And guys, I am going to be closing enrollment at the end of this week. So if you're listening to this recording on day of, that course is going to be closed for enrollment by the following Monday. So you only have a few days to enroll. So if this is something you're interested in, please go look into it right now, because the doors are closing very soon. And if you get in right now, you are grandfathered into the course forever. So I have some really incredible things I'm going to be adding to the course the next time I open it up for enrollment, which will be in a few months. And the price will never be this low again. Like, never ever is it going to be just $30 for all of this content. Like, really, you're getting an incredible deal here. So head to dustyheggy.thinkific.com or dustyheggy.com/getplanty to enroll in the Get Planty Houseplant Foundations online course. And I hope you are so ready to curate your own perfect dreamy houseplant collection, because you guys are going to love it. I had so much fun creating this course, and I cannot wait to hear your feedback. All right, let's dive back in to all the goodness that Christina has to say. It's good, right? I told you.
So I know you've shared a lot of pieces of your story, but can you maybe share with us a little bit of your story? Just maybe to not only so that we can learn more about you and just grow well through hearing your story, but also just to maybe give people some insight on how they can share and approach that when they share their story with other people.
Yeah, definitely. I'll be totally transparent too. Like, I'm going to share my story with you. And like, there is a reality that there's people that involved in the story that might hear this podcast, because I know they like follow me on Instagram and stuff like that. And so like, that's something that I've had to think about and take into account, and like, and that's hard. And I've had to weigh up like the benefits of it, I guess, or the, I'm trying to think of the right word. I'm a word person. I hate when I can't find the right word. The payoff, I guess.
Yeah.
I have to weigh the payoff over the risk. And my story is basically like, so I think when I was, because you asked me this just to sort of like map it out before we talked. I think the thing I started off with when I was writing it down was like my first, I guess what I would call like the conflict in the story. My first one was when I was only 5 years old, and I got diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder. So, and the therapist who diagnosed me, or the psychologist, I'm not sure which one's like licensed to make a diagnosis, but I had that one, whoever he was licensed to say, she's got OCD. And I would not normally diagnose a 5 year old with OCD,
right,
but she has it. And so that was like, there was a lot of peaks and troughs throughout my childhood, because I dealt with a form of OCD called intrusive thoughts. So like, basically just think of like the worst possible thing that like your brain could come up with, and then fixate on it and don't stop thinking about it. And that's what my brain would do. And so it would like, certain things would trigger it and it would last for a couple of months and then it would go away. And I had like probably a solid 5 or 6 years of reprieve. It sort of went away when I was like, I don't know, maybe 7 or so. And then it came back when I was around like 12. And I can remember the moment when it came back. And it seems like so silly thinking about it now, but like, so I really, really love my mom and we've got a super close relationship. And I remember I was like in the mall with her and I saw she picked up an outfit. And I just remember thinking, I don't think that that would look very good on her. And then my brain went, well, you must think that your mom's ugly if you don't think that would look very good on her. And then I started fixating like, oh my gosh, I don't love my mom. Like my brain jumped to that conclusion and I was unable to like rationalize how absurd that was. And that's a super mild example of some of the things that my brain later did, because the OCD spiked as I was also going through puberty. So you can just imagine like what the brain can do with that. So I suffered through that for a couple years silently before I told anybody, because obviously, like I said, I had a couple or quite a few years of like reprieve from the OCD where it didn't seem to be bothering me too much. So my mom couldn't have known that it had come back. And I finally told her when I was 14, because it had gotten to a point where like I was able to rationally recognize that suicidal thoughts were not something that I was going to feed into, but I was having them. Like I was thinking, I can't live in my brain like this for another 60, 70 years. Like if this is my lot, I don't want to do this anymore. And if that's how I feel, then I need to do something about it. So like, right. I was very, very blessed to be raised in a super stable home with like a super good mom who was able to like recognize how to teach me well to rationalize through my thoughts, so that when that thought popped into my head, I was able to recognize it and be like, okay, I need to do something about this. Mm-hmm. So I started going to counseling, and I was also super blessed to have a dad who like made enough money and was totally willing to pay for my counseling. And I went to like the only OCD specialist for youth in California down in Los Angeles. And I was so, so blessed that I had access to that. But like, that was my first time of like really wrestling it out with God. Cause before I told my mom what happened, I wrestled with God for years and I was like, God, take this away. Like, why am I thinking like this? Take this away. I used to try to force myself to sleep just so my brain would shut off. And so after like 2 years of me saying, God, take this away. And he didn't, I was like, okay, well, how do I even know you're real? Like, I'm just sitting here suffering on my own and I don't feel your presence. Why should I believe that you're real? And going through a lot of those big questions that we ask ourselves, you know, for our entire lives, like, you know, we wrestle it out with God when we're struggling, but I really duked it out with him and finally was just like, okay, well, I'm done then. If you're not going to be here for me, then I'm done. And then 2 years later, I talked to my mom and I got help. And only a couple years after that did I recognize that like God was always there. He was there in giving me a mom who cared about what I was going through and who was willing to take me to counseling. He was there in the dad who earned enough money to afford that counseling and was willing to do it because my mom told him like she needs this. Mm-hmm. You know, he was there in giving me the resources to get like healing through going to a therapist. So that was like my childhood teen years. And then as I started to like totally come to grips with that. And I knew how to cope with OCD. You know, all the other struggles of teenage life I could write a book on, but that book's been written 5,000 times already. So yeah. I will skip all that. I had my like first and only other serious relationship when I was 16, and like around about the same time that I started dating, we'll call him my high school sweetheart. I didn't know that my dad was falling into drug addiction. So, he was an addict when he was a teenager, and he got over that completely. And then he ended up hospitalized from the stress of starting his own business. After like a couple of years of running his own business, the stress of it started to like create ulcers in his stomach, and he was hospitalized for that. And to help with the pain, the doctors gave him like prescription heroin to an ex-heroin addict. So it just like reignited his addiction, and it was great. Yeah. Gotta love doctors. But no, I do actually love doctors. It was just one particular one who obviously didn't check his medical history. But so that ruined our lives, because he hid the addiction for a couple of years. It started at the same time that I started dating my boyfriend at the time. So like when I was 16, I was like finally falling into this groove of being really happy and finally finding someone who I loved. And like in the background, I didn't know that my dad was like shooting up and hiding it from everyone. And he managed to hide it from us pretty well for like almost 2 years. And then everything just fell apart. Like he, you know, no one can manage to hide it for that long. And there, he started to get like psychologically abusive and following us. Like he was really good in IT. So he would like track where we were on our phones, and he would follow us and show up to where we were and stuff like that. But we ended up, my mom, my brother, and I had to leave because he wasn't willing to get help. He would kind of go in and out of saying he would go to rehab, and then he wouldn't. And it was just like, there was nothing we could do. So we had to leave. And that was why we ended up in Bakersfield. The three of us were living in my grandpa's back room, sleeping on an air mattress together, like all three of us. And that was like my exit from high school. Mm-hmm. So I graduated high school, and then like only 2 or 3 months later was like basically homeless. And then only a couple months after I was homeless, my boyfriend and I broke up because he went to college and I was still there, and we were teenagers and couldn't handle our emotional differences, and things ended there. So that was hard because like we'd been together for 2 years at that point. I thought we were going to get married. I thought I was going to go to college. You know, I was like, yeah. I was 7th in my class in one of the top charter schools in the country. So I thought like my life was good. And then everything just kind of crashed at once. So then I had this escape to the UK, and like, it didn't suddenly and like magically get better, as much as like, if someone made a Hollywood version of my life, it would be very like, P.S. I love you minus the brain tumor. And like, I just go to the green rolling hills and find this cute Englishman and everything's better. But it totally wasn't like that. Like God healed me over a period, God's still healing me, but over a period of years, you know, and I had to go through the struggle then of immigrating to a different country, and then being separated from my mom, who was my best friend, and like learning how to integrate into a new culture. And so there's all of the things that went with that. But it really was at the time where I went to the UK that God started to heal me. That verse, I've made a way in the desert and streams in the wasteland. I may be misquoting it, but that was like brought to real life for me, because I grew up hating the desert I was in and longing for Britain. Like, if I don't believe in this, but if there were past lives, I lived in Britain because my heart wanted Britain from the time I was a little girl. Yeah. I can even remember when my cousin, she moved to the UK when I was like 3 years old. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing her off at the airport and her mom looking at me and saying, "Christina, never leave your mom and move to Britain, okay? Because it just hurts so much." And like, I remember thinking, huh, that's an interesting thought.
I can move to Britain.
I can move to Britain. But like, I loved everything about British culture my entire upbringing. And like, God was prepping me for that because I never planned to go. Like, the opportunity literally got handed to me when every other opportunity that I had planned out mm-hmm. was taken away from me. Like, I planned to get married, and I planned to go to college, and I planned to like make documentaries with invisible children to help, you know, with charity and bringing God glory. Like, that was my plan. I had the cookie cutter, beautiful American Christian girl plan. And God was like, nope, I have something bigger for you. But right. in order for you to get it, you're going to have, your heart's going to have to break. Like, you're going to have to let go. You know, that whole, I was just reading, Paul saying like yesterday, basically, like, you've got to, like, your old self has to die and your new self will rise from the ashes of that. And God has good things for that new self. And so, like, my whole life did a 180 when I went to the UK, and I got to see literally like my desert landscape turn into green hills, ones that I longed for since I was a little girl. And I never understood why I had that longing. And through that process, you know, God taught me grace and forgiveness and healing. He taught me a lot about myself. He brought a lot of my own sin to light so that I could deal with it. And like, just God really turned me into a different person through the process of like guiding me to a new country by myself, where He was the only one I could lean on. And to still say, like, I've done a good thing in this. Like, I know that you're hurting, and I know that you've lost your family, and I know that you lost your relationship, but I am doing a good thing, and you just need to trust me. So yeah, that's my story in a nutshell.
In a nutshell.
That's not really a nutshell. I talk too much.
I don't think you talk too much at all. I think that God's gifted you with words for a reason. Yeah.
I think God, I like to think so.
Yeah. And I think the beautiful thing for us as listeners to pay attention to as you tell your story is it is so clear that you are not the author of your story, that you are just a character in this story, that like
I love God
that. Is the author and God is directing you. And I think that's the most important thing as we practice telling our story and as we open up and as we're trying to be vulnerable with just so much wisdom, when we get to tell our story through the eyes of God's grace and giving God the glory, even in the just pure crappiness of it, like that's when we get to really grow well from that process.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And that's like, that's the best thing you could tell me, because whenever I tell my story, I don't want people to walk away from it and be like, oh gosh, you're so strong. Like, you went through all that and you moved countries when you were 18 and all this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I was strong because I had God with me. Like right. mm-hmm. that, it's God who did that for me. I could have never imagined moving to the UK. Like, as much as I longed for it, I would not have been brave enough to just go and do it. Like right. God,
otherwise
gave
you
that
would have
opportunity.
Planned that from the beginning.
I would have totally planned yeah. that. In fact, like jokingly, I remember in high school when I told my boyfriend at the time, I was like, if we ever break up, I'm moving to Britain and I'm going to find myself a British musician. And like, hello, that's exactly what I did.
Hello.
I was not serious.
Yeah.
I was not serious when I said I was going to do that. I was like, it was such a joke because it seems like such an absurd thing. Mm-hmm. And like, meanwhile, God's like laughing, I'm sure. Like, oh, honey, if you only knew like what I had planned for you. But yeah. It was totally God orchestrating it, because in my own power, I could not have done these things, because mm-mm. I wouldn't have been brave enough. I wouldn't have been able to orchestrate it. Like, it's a whole other story that I won't get into because it'll take too long. But basically, like, God broke down financial barriers, and I'm talking like tens of thousands of dollars of yeah. financial barriers that it costs to immigrate, like just completely broke them away in ways that like I could never have done. So it's totally God's story. Like, I'm God's creation. God looked at me when I was born and said, this is good. Mm-hmm. And so my story is God saying, this is good. Like, let me be with you. Let me guide you. Follow me and your story will be good. It won't yeah. be just happy. It'll hurt, but it'll be good. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the thing that I want people to like take away from their own reflections in like God's hand in their life, is like, it hurt, but it was good. And yeah. like, good is better than happy. Good is better than easy. Mm-hmm. You know, good is something that is like rooted in eternity. And like, God can only write a good story.
Yeah. Yeah. That's beautiful. I got chills.
Oh, cool. This is just me like rambling. I work at home and I'm like by myself all day, and this is just like me talking to myself most of the time. It's nice.
Oh, well, now it's on the other end. A whole bunch of people.
I know, it's weird.
Okay, so we've been talking about some heavy stuff, but what do you have yeah. a houseplant question I can answer for you?
Oh, yes.
Here.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of answered it for me a little bit. We were chatting on Instagram. I love our plant conversations on Instagram. So they make me so happy. Like, what were they? Onions? How do onions get pregnant?
Pregnant onions. Plant sex.
Yeah, plant sex. Brown chicken. Wow, wow. That was the best ever. So you were talking about air plants the other day. You said that they would be good. My house, I live in it. I live in a 19th century cottage. I always get it mixed up. My house was built in like 1835. Okay. So ancient for America. This is actually not the oldest house on our street. The oldest house on our street was built in like the 1500s.
Yeah. I forget how young America really is.
It's so young. It's so young. Like, I remember I was walking through a city called Chester with some friends of mine, and I was trying to explain to them like how different our concept of old is in the States. And I was like, so yeah, like if you go to San Francisco, you might see something that was built at like turn of the century, and that's like super old.
Right.
And just as I say that, we're walking past a church that was built in 1100.
That's insane.
And I'm like, oh my gosh.
So cool.
Actually that old. It's been renovated, but the front and the back walls are still like the old original thick stone. And so it gets really cold and it gets really, really damp. Like I literally have to scrub my walls once a week because there's like beads of water just like dripping down the walls. And that sounds really gross, but like my house is clean. It's just humid because there's so much moisture that the stone retains. So I want a plant that will cope really well with that kind of like atmosphere, and might even like, is there one that could like help me not have as much like humidity in the air? Cause that would make my life great.
Great. I don't think it will take away humidity, but it would thrive in the humidity. Cause
that works too.
Yeah. If you think about like a jungle, they're always going to be humid and there's tons of plants in there. So it's just going to create probably more humidity.
Okay.
Because of that gas exchange. I would say maybe a dehumidifier will be your friend.
Yeah. And see, I'm doing the exact opposite because I diffuse oils every day. I'm probably making my problem worse.
Just have one and doing one and one doing oil. But
we actually run. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead. You run.
I was going to say, we actually run a dehumidifier like 6 hours a day in the upstairs. So like, it's just an old cottage. Yeah. So maybe like, even if it can't take away the moisture, but just like a plant that will love my house.
Yeah. So almost all plants are going to thrive. I can't think of a single plant who would complain about humidity. There are some plants that need humidity to survive. Things like coffee trees or monstera usually need humidity, or ferns usually need more humidity. I just had an air plant episode release, episode 12, I believe.
I need to go listen to that.
And it's a really good, I felt like I should have paid for that conversation with him, Josh Rosen from Airplant Man. It was just, I felt like I had like just a airplant training. I learned so much and I didn't know hardly anything before this conversation with him. But they, people often think they don't need watered, but they super do need watered. And they absorb their water through these little pores on their leaves called trichomes. And so having an environment that's super humid will just help you to not have to water them as frequently.
Okay. Which is perfect because I always feel really bad. I forget to water my plants and that's probably why I don't have very many.
Yeah. My suggestion is to set a reminder on your phone and then check to see if they need watered.
Yeah. Which I do know how to do because you've taught me how to do that.
Because I taught you.
You taught me. You taught me the very limited amount that I know about plants is all from you and your podcast and your Instagram.
Thanks. So happy I could be a light of planty goodness into your life.
Planty goodness and planty humor.
And planty humor, yeah. I'm probably gonna have to rate this like explicit now.
Oh no. I mean,
I don't think I will. I don't know. I'll have to look. Either way, it's worth it. If you could say plant sex as many times as you can in an episode, I feel like it's worth it.
Oh gosh, don't challenge me to do that. I will go for it. Plant sex.
Okay, what is something in the world or several things that are making you just so super happy?
Tidying up with Maria Kondo is making me
Oh my goodness.
Really happy.
I think the last 4 or 5 guests I've interviewed have said that.
Wow, I am not original at all.
It's apparently
awesome. With the trends. But no, the reason I like it is because, so I'm actually thinking about resharing this blog post because I wrote a blog post like 6 months ago where I was like sharing like my deep emotional like epiphany about my relationship with the belongings in my house. Mm-hmm. And like it's so relevant to this whole craze over tidying up that people are like freaking out about. Like minimalism's been a thing. Like I'm not saying I founded minimalism or anything like that at all, right. But no. I was kind of coming to a lot of these conclusions a fair few months ago. And now all of a sudden everyone's like, oh my gosh, tidying up. Like all the people at my church, mm-hmm. like, Christina, have you ever done a clear out of your house? And I'm like, only every 3 months. Like, yes, that's like, what I do. Really? So I just, it's not just watching tidying up because I kind of get all of the stuff that she's talking about already because I keep my house pretty clean and pretty like pared down. I love that it's getting so popular.
Yeah.
Like, I love that everyone's coming to these conclusions that I have like came to like a year ago. So I kind of want to reshare that blog post because I feel like more people read it now and be like, oh, I get it. I get
and
it now.
From your perspective is always going to be good too.
Yeah. 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 So that's been making me happy. I love that it's been super popular. It's been a big thing in my church. A lot of people have been watching it in my church and like people have been coming to me. I guess I didn't realize that people did identify me as someone who like kind of keeps things tidy and minimal because no one ever like talks to me about it. But a bunch of people in my church have been coming up to me and being like, oh my gosh, Christina, you'll be so proud. I did a clear out of my house last week after watching Marie Kondo. And I'm like, oh good. I'm glad you feel like you need to report back to me.
Yeah, just check in.
Yeah. Good for you. I'm glad. So that's been making me happy. And she's just cute. Like I just like watching her because she's adorable. But also, I've started trying to shop more ethically, which most of the time means I just shop secondhand. Like I'm not under the impression that people can afford to shop ethically all the time. Like that's the biggest struggle with shopping ethically is like ethically made clothes are expensive because everyone was paid fairly for it. So that's tough. And I do a lot of my shopping secondhand, because of that. So I got something new over Christmas that made me really happy because it was like full price ethically made. I got a dress by a company in California called Pine and Smith. And it's this beautiful linen dress. And I love linen because it keeps me warm in the winter and cool in the summer. And it's like just pretty and organic and fits with my branding and all of those things.
So nice on your
skin. And it just feels so good. Yeah. So I've been wearing that like every single day. I should have worn it right now, but it's like I'm all bundled up in my house because it's snowing outside. But yeah, so that's been making me happy because I wear it and it just like over the past year, I've been realizing how okay it is to want to feel beautiful in my clothes. I used to think that that was indulgent.
Yeah, I did too.
And last year I realized like, oh, actually like what I put on my body has an impact on how I feel about myself. And so if I can choose to feel better about myself, like that's a good thing. So I should do that. So I've been like more intentional with not just like how I use my money to buy clothes and where that money's going and is it ethical, but also like how do the clothes make me feel? And like I wear this dress and it makes me feel like, this sounds really cheesy, but it makes me feel like exactly myself. Like I just feel like everything that I feel in my head that I represent and like the aesthetic I have and my vibes and my values, like I just feel like all of that is being like demonstrated on my body and that makes me feel good. So that's been making me happy.
Yeah. I think that's a good thing to make you happy. I think there's a lot of value in that.
Yeah.
I think, yeah. One of my favorite, Olivia Youngs from Simply Live & Co. has a really great
I love resource. Her.
Yeah, she was on the podcast, I can't remember what episode, but a few episodes back, talking about ethical fashion. And she has a really, really good resource. And I know she just updated it. It's called The List on her website.
So I've used it.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
It's just a huge resource with tons and tons of ethical fashions. And she has one specific to that's going to be less expensive. So yeah, I use that like all the time.
I use that list. I love it. This was like one of the few pieces now that's in my wardrobe that is, I wouldn't even call it super expensive because when you look at some stuff for ethical fashion, like one dress might be $500. This one with shipping was like $180, mm-hmm. which is still a lot, but like it is so well made and it is going to last me a long time. So like the investment is worth it. But that's still not like, you know, you compare that to like a dress at Target would be $30. So like in the grand scheme of things,
part in two washes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but like in the grand scheme of like what people are willing to pay, if they can't really afford ethical fashion, that dress might still feel too expensive to them. Right. So like, I love that she's done that with her list to kind of classify more affordable things, but also like super use like eBay. And my favorite app is Vinted, and it's in the UK, but it's also in the States, like for secondhand stuff. And you can search for exactly the style that you're wanting. So like, there's some things that like, I just don't want to pay ethical prices for, because it's just like a plain white top and I don't want to spend $80 on a plain white t-shirt. So what I will do is I'll go and I'll find one secondhand on Vinted that's my size. And like, I'm giving £5 to someone who's like a student, and they're going to use that to eat that week. And the money's not going back into the, like the fast fashion trade. So right. I don't feel a huge moral dilemma about wearing brands that are fast fashion, as long as the money that I have earned isn't funding the fast fashion. Mm-hmm. So like, I'm cool with secondhand stuff, and I do that all the time.
Yeah, that's one of the big ways that every ethical fashion blogger or influencer that I know suggests starting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the most practical way. Cause like, you can't afford to spend like $180 on a dress all the time and stuff like that. So yeah, it's I just do a lot of shopping on eBay and Vinted, but it's nice once in a while. It's nice to get something new.
Yeah, to get something new that makes you feel alive and happy and pretty.
Yeah.
Worth it.
Yeah.
So exciting. Well, can you tell everybody how they can get in contact with you and follow you in all the places?
Yeah, all the places. So the best place to find me, because I hang out there way too much, is on Instagram.
We are.
I have an Instagram problem. That's something I'm working on. But yeah, Christina Lynn Creative on Instagram. No underscores or anything, just one long word. It's LYNN for Lynn, in case you can't find me with one N. It's Christina Lynn Creative. My website's just ChristinaLynnCreative.com. That's getting a total overhaul right now. So if you go on there, I'm so excited. I've spent all day working on it today. But if you go on there now, like I'm saying that, I don't know when this podcast is coming out, but if you go on there when you hear this, it's quite possible it won't look the way it's going to look in like a month and a bit, because I'm expanding on my services and stuff. But you can still find me there now. Christina Lynn Creative on Facebook. That, to be honest, isn't where I hang out that much. It's like where I link all of my other places to.
Yep, same.
Yeah. And then I'll be on YouTube soonish. I'm going to start doing vlogs, and that'll also be Christina Lynn Creative. So pretty much on all of the platforms, it's just Christina Lynn Creative.
Perfect. Yeah. And I'll have links to all her stuff in the show notes at revivenursery.com/podcast. And you can find it in the show notes of whatever podcast listening app you're in also.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Thanks for telling your story and for being real with us. I super love you.
I super love you too. Thanks for having me on and letting me share and not making me feel like I talk too much.
Never.
I know. I mean, I too am having words hard time coming out of mouth, right? Good quality content. And I really want to encourage you one more time to head to Christina Live Creative, ChristinaLynnCreative.com, because her website is officially live and it's beautiful. And you can download Christina's Instagram aesthetic method and start utilizing Instagram as a tool to bring more joy and more gratitude and more clarity. And let that be a place that you get to tell your story. What are some things that we can take away from what Christina said and implement in our lives right now to begin that process of growing well through storytelling and through art and through photography? One of the things that stuck out the most to me is the boundaries that we set on that process, and just sort of asking yourself some questions like, is this a safe thing to share right now? Is this going to harm somebody else if I share this? Is it going to harm myself if I share this? And how can I share it in a way that will glorify Christ above all else? I think those are some good questions to begin asking ourselves as we go through the process of understanding how to share our testimony and understanding how to share the hard things in our lives. And even something as difficult as Christina's story, like she shared it from a place of glorifying Christ, from a place of inspiring and encouraging others, but not at the cost of her own personal growth and well-being and safety. And I think that's really, really important to note and to understand. I also really love her talking about her process of creativity, like just where God has brought her from something as simple as photographing silly gum wrappers to being able to use her voice and her incredible set of skills that I think sometimes felt to her less like a gift and more like a curse, but God is slowly revealing to her how beautiful the gifts that he has given her are. And I would guess that he is doing that very same thing to us. I know I can see that in my own life, especially within business, that I have such a desire to teach business and such a desire to lean into this calling that I believe that God has given to me. And I'm apprehensive of that because I don't feel qualified enough, or because I'm scared, or because I'm worried that people will think I'm flip-flopping back and forth from topic to topic. And God is showing me that through all of these things that I have done within business, there is a common theme of wanting to be creative, of wanting to inspire others, and wanting to pursue growing well. So I urge you to think about the things that you've gone through in your own life and your hobbies and your interests, and how can you see God working through all of those things and see that sort of common story that he is trying to tell you over and over again. And I would wager to guess that it's one laden with more grace than you're willing to admit. Like, God loves you so much. And I think that that is so beautiful throughout Christina's story, in that she clearly did not write this herself. Like, that was not a path that she had chosen for herself. But being a good friend of Christina, I can see how God has rewarded her in constantly searching after Christ and in pursuing growing well, even in the midst of some really crappy, shitty seasons. So, all that to say, ask God to clarify those things for you, and I guarantee you that he will. I also want to ask you to head to iTunes and pretty please leave the Grow Well podcast a rating and a review. I know it takes time out of your day, and that you have just listened for the last hour to us talk about some really deep stuff, and that your mind might be a little exhausted. But if you could just take a quick second, please know that those reviews and those ratings are what makes or breaks a podcast. So if you feel this is something that you're learning from, and this is a place that you love to come and listen and be inspired and encouraged and learn from, please, please, please do me the favor of taking some time and leaving a rating and a review, and know that I am very deeply grateful for that. Finally, don't forget to take advantage of this incredibly low price point for the Get Planty Houseplant Foundations course. You can get it at dustyheggie.com/getplanty, and there you can enroll in the Get Planty course. You can learn more about it. And just remember that I'm closing enrollment in just a few days. It will reopen, but it will not ever be at just $30. So if that's something that you want to take advantage of, head to dustyheggie.com. There I also have all kinds of plant care guides. I have a really fun free houseplant quiz that matches you with a houseplant that is going to be most suitable for you and for your home. It's a really great place. So I have three jobs for you real quick. Head to iTunes, leave me a rating review. Head to ChristinaLynnCreative.com and download Christina's Instagram aesthetic method. And then head to DustyHeggie.com/GetPlanty and enroll in the Get Planty course, because these three tools are going to help encourage and inspire Christina and myself. And they're going to be really, really beneficial and really, really helpful for you on your own personal growth journey. So know that you are so deeply loved, that I'm praying for you guys always, and that I am very, very, very grateful to be here. Have a great week of growing well.